Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
We have talked extensively about Sunday Night Football, and now it's time to move on. But resetting the top storylines, we have 8 teams into the NFL playoffs now. 8 teams have claimed spots. 3 of them are new, so we're not in the postseason a year ago. That includes Buffalo, and that is such a cool story for Bills fans who I can accurately describe as long-suffering. I know many, including one of my former colleagues, and she lives and dies with the Buffalo Bills, and for so long has been wearing that pain on the exterior. Her heart is essentially outside her body and exposed for all to see. Everyone knows that she's a Bills fan, and she's constantly...
Touchdown, Buffalo!
She's constantly getting condolences from fellow football fans, but not anymore. First double-digit win season going back to the late 90s, second playoff spot since the turn of the century. Patriots also lock up a playoff spot with a victory over the Cincinnati Bengals, though we don't yet know the winner of the AFC East. Ravens, Chiefs were already in as division winners in the AFC. In the NFC, the Packers take care of some business, but then they needed to wait on the Cowboys against the Rams to know for sure if they would lock up a spot in the tournament before moving to week 16. Cowboys took care of business, finally, against their opponent, Los Angeles, and so we'll get to that game this hour. But also, because the Rams lost, you had the Seahawks and the Niners getting into the playoffs as well, though the seeding in the NFC has all been just completely blown up, and right now it's Seattle as the top seed, Green Bay as the 2 seed, though that could change. The Packers can clinch the NFC North with a win in their final 2 games. They only need to win 1 time, but coming up a week from Monday, so week 16, Monday Night Football, it's Packers-Vikings, and obviously Minnesota still has a lot to play for as well. Though, man, the way the defense performed on Sunday, you kind of think Minnesota is primed and ready for January. That Mike Zimmer defense is scary. 7 turnovers against the Los Angeles Chargers, who I know are turnover prone. But then Danielle Hunter with a phenomenal game, to the point where I feel like he might need to be part of Monday MVP, or if he's not, if we don't have a spot for him, then I might vote for him anyway. What a game for him with sacks and tackles and forced fumbles and a fumble recovery. So the Vikings keeping pace, though not in the playoffs yet. A lot still on the line as we have 2 weeks and 1 game yet to go. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence here on CBS Sports Radio. Thanks so much for tuning in. You can find me on Twitter, A-Law Radio, and also on our Facebook page, After Hours with Amy Lawrence. We're inside the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loan Studios that has a brand new counter. I'll need to take a picture. Home is so much more than a house. It's the home of your dreams, and for 30 years, they've been making it better. Rocket Mortgage, push button, get mortgage. Yeah, so I walked into our main studios here a few hours ago, and I noticed that the counters, I don't know if you call them counters, I guess the console, the tabletops, completely different color. A slate gray now, where they were more beige before. Although I got to tell you, considering how many food and drink stains and people inks and markers and everything else, it was time. If we could only get some new desktop monitors, and a few new chairs, it would really be a Merry Christmas.
I'm pumped!
It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence here on CBS Sports Radio. So yes, we have a lot to get to, but why don't we talk about the California IA teams. Man, in the Bay Area, you had a bittersweet farewell, maybe more bitter considering the way that it ended. What a tough way for the Raiders to go out. They're moving to Las Vegas in mere months. And this was the last stand at the last stadium that was still being used for both baseball and football. The Alameda County Oakland Coliseum. It's got a different name now, but I don't know what it is. I will always remember it as the Coliseum. And it's still the home to the Oakland A's, but no longer to the Raiders. And so I tried to put myself in the shoes of Raiders fans, wondering what this was like for them. And we've had, what, the St. Louis sports fans know that their team, the Rams, was getting ready to move to Los Angeles. We know the Browns had a break. They knew their franchise run was coming to an end on the shores of Lake Erie, though they did get another team, but they had to watch their original team get moved to Baltimore. Certainly the Colts didn't know that their tenure was coming to an end because that team got moved under cover of night to Indianapolis. But we've seen teams move around before. There's so much history at the Coliseum. We know John Gruden loves the Coliseum. And no doubt he would have liked to see this one end a different way. It was a mistake-infested second half for the Raiders. Honestly, the Raiders did not deserve a victory. Their fans might have deserved a victory at the end. And there were some fans who threw debris on the field. I even saw a tweet describing nachos on the field. I guess they were cold and not worth eating anymore. But there were also some tweets that described the atmosphere as quiet, somber, a little bit eerie even. But you did have Raiders, including Derek Carr, kind of come out and thank the fans, even though he got booed at the end. Gosh, talk about mistakes. He made a big one. The Raiders were up 16-3 at halftime, and they were trying to run out the clock. So it seemed like they were playing really conservative in the second half, trying to run out the clock. They get some good production from their rookie, Josh Jacobs, and they think they have another first down run with Derek Carr. But somehow, he ends up going out of bounds on a run. And instead of forcing the Jaguars to use a timeout, he stops the clock when he goes out of bounds. You also have a couple of missed field goals. Daniel Carlson misses from 50 yards, gets another chance on a penalty, and then misses again from closer in. There was a delay of game mixed in there as well. Just mistake-ridden second half for the Raiders. Meanwhile, Gardner Minshew was doing his thing. Remember, he took over for Nick Foles, and you could tell that the Jaguars were desperate to stop their 5-game losing skid. So he leads back-to-back scoring drives in the final 5.5 minutes.
34 seconds to play. Down 3. Third and goal from the 4 for Jacksonville. 2 right, 1 left. The show and Blaze are coming. Gardner drops the throw, fires to the right side. The ball is caught. Touchdown, Chris Conley. Touchdown, Jacksonville. And the Jags have taken the lead with 31 seconds to play.
Jaguars back 8 players up, rush only 3. Carr steps up, fires the Hail Mary high up into the air, right side of the end zone, jump ball up in the air, incomplete. And in the final act, the Raiders have lost to the Jacksonville Jaguars in the Oakland Alameda Coliseum.
Frank Frangie with the call of Minshew's second touchdown pass to Chris Conley, and that one happening in the final minute on the Jaguars radio network, and then the familiar voice of Brent Musburger, the final call of Oakland's last game inside the Coliseum on the Raiders radio network. It's after hours here on CBS Sports Radio. I knew that John Gruden would be feeling this because he loves the Coliseum. He loves the atmosphere. It's a place that he considers home.
I'd like to thank the fans. I'd like to thank the city of Oakland for supporting the Raiders and being faithful in all kinds of seasons. And I'll miss them. I love them. And I'm sorry about the outcome today.
First and foremost, it's more about the city. It's more about the every person that's involved, the people playing and the people not playing, people that are cheering it on. So I feel bad about that. Like, I feel like everyone does. And you want to win. You want to go in and out on a high note.
Darren Waller, part of that last game for the Oakland Raiders at the Coliseum as well. It doesn't change a whole lot for the Jacksonville Jaguars, but for Gardner Minshew, a rookie QB, to be part of this piece of NFL history is something he won't forget.
Yeah, no, it was awesome. I mean, it's like we were saying, it's a piece of football history, you know, something special to be a part of. It'll be like Affleck trivia question in like 20 years, you know, so it's definitely going to be cool to be a part of that.
We hired the duck. It's After Hours here on CBS Sports Radio. What a disappointment for the Raiders. And I don't just mean on Sunday, but a disappointment for the Raiders after what they had done to get above 500 and put themselves into the playoff conversation in the AFC. And it was all open for them. It was available. Even with the Chiefs scuffling a little bit. Now they've returned to AFC contending form. But the Raiders took care of business in three consecutive games against the Lions, the Chargers, Bengals. Okay, I got you. All opponents that are not going to the postseason. But then they had an opportunity against the Jets and got smoked. Yeah, I mean smoked. At MetLife, they lost by 31 points. And it was the start of a brutal run for the defense. It's like the Oakland defense fell off the map. Then going into Arrowhead and giving up 40 points. And then against the Titans last week, got doubled up and gave up 42 points.
Welcome to the club, bro.
So against the Jaguars, only 20 points. But two touchdown drives in the final 5.5 minutes. That Oakland defense needs a facelift. And they still have a chance to get to 500. But on the road at the Chargers, at the Broncos, fine, salvage something. But if this wasn't enough to be able to slam the door there at the end, and I get it, not all of these players have an emotional attachment to the Coliseum, but what about your fans? So if you're a Raiders fan, I'd love to hear from you, because I don't actually know how this feels. I'm trying to put myself in your shoes. And maybe some of you are happy to see them go. Maybe you say good riddance. You can find me on Twitter, A-Law Radio, also on our Facebook page. I will say, bright spot for the Raiders this season, Josh Jacobs, the rookie, 1,100-plus rushing yards. It's been one heck of a campaign for him. And there were a lot of positives there for Oakland for a while. But you don't stop playing after week number 12. If you did, there'd be a whole lot of different teams into the postseason. All right, coming up also in the Bay Area, the San Francisco 49ers. As we're talking about defense, the Niners faltering in the end against Matt Ryan and Julio Jones. This was the Julio game. Do you know he hadn't had a touchdown in 9 games? He made up for it on Sunday. So we'll get to that, plus the Rams. They pooped the bed in Dallas, but Dallas was due. It's a bit of a roller coaster ride for the Cowboys, as you know. You never know when the offense is going to show up.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
The Rams 19, 3rd and 10. Prescott in the gun, back to throw, four-man rush, standing and throwing the ball to the right, and a nifty catch for Whitford. It's a three, and three steps into the end zone for the GOAT. Touchdown, Witten and the Cowboys. Prescott in the gun, fake. Now he's going to be rushed by Fowler. Steps back from that, throws deep down the field. Wide open at the 35. It's Tavon Austin. He's going to dance in. That's the easiest 59-yard touchdown Prescott's ever thrown or Austin's ever caught. And he's doing a little hoedown dance in the end zone. Officially from the three, they run a read option handoff. Elliott broke through and walked the dog. That is Ezekiel Elliott at his best. Touchdown.
Our guys are off the charts. We have big-time players on our team. We have great leadership on our team, and guys just came to work. They worked hard all week long and just did everything they could to prepare the right way, and that's really what the focus was.
Off the field, on the money, and after hours, it's time to talk football with Amy Lawrence.
The Dallas Cowboys rebound, and they get a hot start. They score on four first half drives, four touchdowns on four drives to post a 28-7 lead over the Rams at the break. Heady times. You can hear it with Brad Sham on the Cowboys radio network. Ezekiel Elliott already had 78 yards and a couple of scores before they hit the halftime locker room. And get this, 263 yards rushing as a team. So both Elliott and Tony Pollard, the rookie, were over 100 yards each, and they combined for three touchdowns. Dak Prescott didn't even really need to do much. He threw a couple of touchdown passes, but he was more about the managing, not turning the ball over. Nearly 500 total yards for the Cowboys against a Rams defense that didn't get a huge push from Aaron Donald, and I don't mean that as a slight of Donald. He always draws the most attention. The game plans are focused on slowing him down, containing him, limiting him. But the Cowboys were effective. You know who else was great in this game? Sean Lee, who didn't practice all week. Sometimes I feel like that guy is held together by duct tape. And yet he continues to show the rest of that team what it means to be heart, soul, body, mind, and spirit all in. A lot of times you don't know if he's going to play, but he always goes out there and gives it everything he's got. And he was a force for Jerry Jones and for the Dallas Cowboys. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. It didn't necessarily end the Rams' chances of making the playoffs, but we knew they already needed to get some help and needed to help themselves. And they didn't do those things for Sean McVay.
They beat us in all three phases, and you got to give them credit. We didn't play nearly good enough, didn't coach good enough, and these are things that we just got to figure out. You know, we haven't been consistent enough as a football team really throughout this season. That's a big part of my responsibility is to figure out solutions and help us be more consistent.
So if it makes you feel better, the Cowboys are now 500. There's still a chance they could finish above 500 or below 500 and make the playoffs either way. It's not something that really bugs me if a team under 500 makes the postseason. I'm not one of those, we need to change the seating for the playoffs, la, 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 la. I'm fine with the divisions. I'm fine with how it works out. Every division takes its turn, either being competitive or having a down year. But I do think that teams are better served by playing their best football of the year, if possible. I'd rather see competitive football in January. So for the Cowboys, wildly inconsistent. Will the real Dallas Cowboys please stand up? I have no idea who they are, honestly. I worry about their character a little bit. Sometimes I think they're soft, but I don't know who they are. They did snap their second three-game losing streak of the season. And now, because Philadelphia won on Sunday, Cowboys and Eagles are knotted at 7-7 atop the NFC East. And, of course, they play next weekend. 855-212-4227. That's 855-212-4CBS. It's our toll-free line brought to you by Geico. With a quick way you can save money, switch to Geico. Go to geico.com, and in 15 minutes, you could save 15% or more on your car insurance. Before we hear from you, I know you want to hear from Jerry Jones.
I think that everybody has soul-searched, as you should be, and you saw a lot of pride out there tonight, and I think hopefully we'll see that as we go forward into our really second season here, hopefully.
It is playoff football already for the Cowboys. They don't have the luxury of treating these like regular season games and, oh, we'll play for tomorrow. They've been done that too much this season. They have no choice now. You got to take care of business or you're going to sit back and watch. Let's talk to Kevin, who's in Texas. Welcome to After Hours.
Thank you, Amy, for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm a Cowboy fan and obviously happy about the win over the Rams. It wasn't a must win, but of course we're happy about it. And if it starts a three-game streak into the playoffs, even better. My question for you, though, it's actually perplexing to me, but is Dak Prescott a franchise quarterback worth paying $35 to $40 million?
Well, I don't know where the $40 million's coming from. I don't think it'll take $40 million to keep him, and I do not believe the report that he requested $40 million. That's ludicrous. I don't even think it's going to take it's going to take $30 million to keep him. I do believe he's a franchise quarterback. I think that Dak has proven this year that he has all the goods that you need in a franchise QB. And when you think about the bear cupboard out there, and the fact that quarterbacks who are consistent and who are smart and who make good decisions and who don't turn the ball over a lot, who have winning records, those quarterbacks are hard to come by. I mean, we're not talking about a position in which you can just, you know, go find one on the street somewhere. And so I always say the devil you know, the devil you don't know. And you have to consider both. I think Dak has played well this season. I don't think he's played poorly. I think they have an offensive formula that works just fine. They've got plenty of guys that they can throw to. They've got Zeke. They've got Pollard. So now they have a 1-2 punch. When the offensive line is stout and wins the battle in the trenches, I think the offense is fine. So, yes, I do believe Dak Prescott's a franchise quarterback. I don't know that it takes $30 million to re-sign him. I think the last offer I'd kind of heard was $27 million. But even so, if you don't pay Dak, you're going back to the well, whether it's a rookie, so you get cheap labor, great, but you're starting all over again, or whether you go out and you find a franchise QB. But you tell me, Kevin, where you're going to do that among veteran quarterbacks. Where I guess you could lure Ryan Tannehill if he's available.
Hey, the one nagging thing to me, Amy, just real quick, his quote unquote accuracy issue. And I mean, if you're a fan and you watch every game and you're not just blindly biased, you see it. It's the high passes, low passes behind the receivers. I mean, it's a constant. I mean, it's not every single pass, but it's more than you like.
Well, no, he's not Drew Brees, Kevin. I'll give you that. He's not Drew Brees. But tell me where you look for. Would you prefer to start over and find a quarterback in the draft? Because potentially the Cowboys are going to be in the playoffs, which means they're not going to have a high draft pick, though, of course, Dak didn't come out of the first round or the second round. I mean, are you ready to start over again? Because if you don't pay Dak, where are you going to find a quarterback?
I've been a huge Dak supporter for 4 years. I thought this was going to be a breakout year for him, and it has for the most part, except for that accuracy issue.
Okay,
well. The only thing that's held me back. But honestly, at this point, I'm not positive. I'm almost, I'm a fan, and after the Bears game, like a lot of fans, I mean, I went over the edge. The whole team was miserable, but so was Dak. And it pushed me over the edge, and I'm like, man, I just don't know. I just don't know if I want
to. Okay, so then fine. Tell me what your solution is. If it's not Dak Prescott, where are you going?
Yeah, to answer your question, I was thinking, yes, at this point I am willing to franchise tag him and go ahead and draft another quarterback. You know, right now I'm kind of backed off on that a little bit, and I'm willing to give him, the rest of the season through the playoffs and just see what happens. And if he steps up and he shows, good quarterbacks perform in big games. I mean, if he steps up against the Eagles and takes care of business, he gets into the wild card round, takes care of business, gets into the division round, takes care of business. Sure, I'll take him.
Kevin, I think your bar is really high. I'm sorry I have to let you go because we're at the bottom of the hour here. That's a lot to ask, and quarterbacks do not win games by themselves. I mean, I hate the quarterback stat. I can't stand it. The quarterback wins. Why don't we keep wins for offensive lines? I understand what you're saying, but Dak Prescott's had a really good year. His quarterback rating is just a smidge below 100. He's got a career high in touchdown passes. He only has 11 interceptions. And I understand it's been frustrating, but quarterbacks don't win and lose in vacuums. And I still come back to, who are you going to get as your quarterback if you don't pay Dak? Ryan Tannehill's a free agent that I can think of. Case Keenum might be available again. I mean, there are some recycled quarterbacks out there you could look for. But I'm pretty confident Jerry Jones likes what he has in Dak and is ready to pay him. Now, we'll see how much. We'll see if they come to an agreement. But nothing that Jerry has indicated or said so far this season in all his frustration would lead me to believe he's ready to move on from Dak Prescott. All right, you can find me on Twitter, A-Law Radio. We'll get back to some of your calls. We also want to go through that crazy ending for the Niners and Falcons. And I love the fight from Atlanta. They got nothing left to play for, right? No, wrong. Of course, they're playing for jobs, potentially Dan Quinn's job. And they gave the Niners all they could handle to the very end.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Turner in motion. Russ from the shotguns. Hands it to Carson. He's got a first down. He gets to the goal line. Does he get it? He does. Touchdown, Seahawks. Great push by the Seahawks up front. DJ Fluker leading Carson into the end zone, and man, is he fired up.
We got three turnovers on defense. That was huge. And then offensively, we've just been rolling. We had that one really kind of lull last week. We didn't feel like we were playing on our best. We were very diligent about what we wanted to do, very intentional about how we wanted to play today. Keep the tempo up, be physical, get the ball down the field when we could, you know, and just find a way. And sure enough, we did.
It's time to pull on the pads and hit somebody. On After Hours with Amy Lawrence, CBS Sports Radio.
Oh, what a tangled web in the NFC West. And so dramatic, the Seattle Seahawks, they don't actually like being front runners. They don't like being ahead by two scores. It feels unnatural and uncomfortable for them. They prefer tight and close and late. They prefer higher degree of difficulty. Russell Wilson with a couple of touchdown passes in the first half of their game in Charlotte, so against the Panthers. And then Chris Carson with a couple of TD runs. And Seattle is up by 20 points midway through the fourth quarter. The score was 30-10. How did this turn into a one-score game? Oh, well, because it's Seattle, and this is what they do. Steve Rabel with the call on the Seahawks radio network, and then Russell Wilson after that lauding the defense. Yes, Kyle Allen with three more turnovers, three more interceptions, two of them coming in the second half. And it really did ruin what was a spectacular game from Christian McCaffrey. 175 total yards, a couple more touchdowns. And so Carolina was able to put together back-to-back scoring drives so that Seattle felt more comfortable. It was more natural for the Seahawks. They did get the first down late to be able to close the door. And despite their affinity for close games, or as my friend Mike, who covers the Seahawks, calls them the cardiac kids, despite their affinity for these situations that make their fans get all kinds of nervous, they're now 7-1 on the road. And with the Rams losing in Dallas, the Seahawks clinched a playoff spot. And with the Niners losing, it's actually the Seahawks that are on top of the NFC West. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. 8 playoff appearances in 10 seasons under Pete Carroll. Man, has he turned that franchise around. 855-212-4227. That's 855-212-4CBS. Let's talk Niners and Falcons, and then we'll get back to your phone calls. Whole lot of fight by Atlanta. I was really impressed. The Falcons in the Bay Area tied at the half. There was a muffed punt there in the second half and an easy 2-yard touchdown. Easy for me to say. But a 2-yard touchdown by the Niners. And San Francisco's in front 19-10. early in the fourth quarter. Now, you would think with the Niners' defense, that would be plenty of cushion, right? No. Matt Ryan engineers a 75-yard touchdown drive. And then in the Atlanta D, that much maligned unit that has been so criticized, and let's just be honest, so porous most of the season, that Dan Quinn defense holds the Niners to a field goal on their next possession. And so the Falcons get the ball back with about a minute 45 to go. And it was Julio Jones everywhere, like everywhere. He had a touchdown earlier in the game, which was his first one in 9 contests. And on this drive for the Falcons in the final 2 minutes, he's responsible for twice moving the chains. And then after an Austin Hooper touchdown is overturned on review. So it's a long review. 8 seconds left in the game, and it turned into what felt like 8 hours waiting for replay review. I don't know what a catch is. We still don't know what a catch is. When you slow it down and look frame by frame, something can appear to be a catch that's not, and vice versa. But there were still a couple of seconds left on the clock, and there was no other choice for the Falcons. They knew what they had to do.
Matt on the near hash. Snap from Matt. Looks left. Matt throws. Caught. Jones chopped down short of the end zone. Is he ruled in or out? He's ruled short. Right at the goal line.
Why am I laughing? Because as Wes Durham says on the Falcons Radio Network, it was initially ruled that he was short of the goal line. But then upon replay review, the Falcons get the benefit of the doubt. The second time they have to go to the Brain Trust in New York City. Just crazy. Still, Julio, too much Julio, but a whole lot of Julio for Matt Ryan.
We started with Russell Gage on the left-hand side, and they covered it well, but we knew we had Julio coming back to us. And just a physical, strong catch by him. Great job of body awareness, knowing where he was at, and making sure that that ball was across the plane.
Game on the line. Those are the moments as a coach that you totally live for. It makes you feel most alive. It was awesome.
Dan Quinn fired up, and he should be. Huge win for his team, even though they're not playing for anything. They're officially eliminated. But to see the way they were denied on the Austin Hooper replay, and then to watch Julio fight just to get the ball across the plane was impressive. And that's what he can do. He's quiet. He doesn't say a whole lot, but his game speaks for him. And he will do whatever the Falcons ask of him. So he pushes the ball across the goal line with a second to go. And then there was this weird play at the end, a defensive touchdown. I guess for gamblers, it was a big deal. But the kickoff, San Francisco is trying to lateral around and trying to make something happen. And there was a loose ball that Atlanta falls on for a touchdown that gave them the 29-22 margin. Now, after the fact, the Niners find out that they are still into the postseason because the Rams lost in Dallas.
Yeah, I'd heard that in the locker room. It's mixed emotions right now. I mean, it's always good to, you know, get into the playoffs and everything, but just how it happened, it's tough.
Jimmy Garoppolo, 22 of 34, 200 yards on the nose, along with a touchdown. And the Niners had over 100 yards rushing. They had George Kittle with 134 yards receiving. He's a marvelous beast. But they also lost a couple of fumbles. And in the end, the defense wasn't stout and didn't stand up against the Falcons. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence here on CBS Sports Radio, 855-212-4227. Let's squeeze in a couple of calls before the top. Steven is listening in West Virginia.
Amy, what's going on?
Hey.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm good.
The hate for Dak needs to stop, man. I mean, what else do they want that man to do? I mean, he's pretty much done everything they asked him to do. I mean, he leads the league in passing. He's handled it well, man. He didn't sit out. He's been a model citizen. He's handled it well. Now, I think the future of this team, it rides on the ego of Jerry Jones. Now, what we have in place, we have a team in place, a great offense in place. The defense might need some work. But at the same time, we've seen what Jason Garrett is. At what point do you bring the right people in to be able to maximize Dak Prescott's potential as well as the team's potential?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good question. We'll see what Jerry Jones does ultimately. I do think that he tried. I mean, they completely remade the offensive coaching staff, and he's indicated that one reason that they kept Garrett around is because he provides some wisdom and some experience where so many of the guys they have on that coaching staff, especially if you're talking about a Kellen Moore, you're talking about their new quarterbacks coach, these are guys that have no experience or very little. And so, I mean, everything they want is still in front of them. I do think it's time for a change, and I don't necessarily think that's a that it's all on Jason Garrett or it's a, you know, it's an indictment of Garrett, but everybody needs a change. He's been in place for a decade. I think he'll get another coaching job. But if the Cowboys aren't going to break out of this pattern where they do just enough, a change of leadership at the top, I think, is the right way to go.
I mean, Jimmy Johnson knew a lot and look where that got him. So I think it's a good old boys club being ran in Dallas, man. It's a who you know coaching staff. So I think, I mean, when we're in a Super Bowl, before the season, we're talking about a Super Bowl potential team. So with that being said, you hire a rookie offensive coordinator. So, I mean, it's ego, man. Like, we got to get somebody on this staff. We got to get a coach in there who can hire his own staff. Somebody that Jerry might be able to trust, man, because if he keeps doing it the way that he wants to do it, it's not working. It hasn't worked in 25 years. So we got Dak Prescott. You look at all these other teams who have worse quarterbacks and less talent on offense, such as the 49ers. You look at Atlanta when Shanahan left. Look at him with Shanahan. Look at Garoppolo. I can't say that Garoppolo is better than Dak Prescott, but Shanahan knows how to maximize his talent, and he knows his personnel. So you have to be able to make adjustments.
It's also taken a few years. I mean, with Shanahan, it's taken a few years. It took him a while to find Garoppolo, and of course, they were trying to get pieces in place for him to have around him. I have to let you go because we're at the top of the hour. I'm not sure exactly what you mean by the old boys club, but I don't think Jason Garrett's part of it. I just think Jason Garrett's personality fits Jerry Jones so well. He's not an alpha male, Garrett. He's not going to push back with Jerry Jones, certainly not publicly. And so their personalities kind of mesh. Now, again, I don't have any issue with there being a change after 10 years, especially when mediocrity has kind of been the order of the day, except for a couple of seasons here and there. But I also know that at this point, that shouldn't be the consideration because they could still win the NFC East and host a playoff game. So everything the Cowboys want is still in front of them because of the nature of the NFC East. All right, straight ahead, the NFC North has got at least one playoff team. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence, CBS Sports Radio.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.